The voice you're about to hear, that of our guest this morning, is one that is so well known and so endearing to hundreds of thousands of Americans who live in certain quarters of our country. She's been described by poet Langston Hughes as the funniest woman in the world outside of Beatrice Lilly. And much as I like Beatrice Lilly, I perhaps would even do without the exception this instance. Here, then, is Mums Mabley, Jackie Mums Mabley, her voice before an audience at the Apollo Theater in New York some few years ago, telling about her experience on the White House lawn. And so the audience howled and laughed, as they always do when you're on Mums. Mums Mabley, our guest this morning. And you are known to so many people, and yet I feel so good if we could find out who you are, Mums. What made you the performer you are, the artist, your whole background?
Well, I tell you, son, I was in Buffalo, New York. And as young girls do that run away from home sometime, get in a little thing station. But I was raised with God-fearing parents, and I always prayed a lot. And I got on my knees at Mrs. Lanier's house in Buffalo and prayed to God to open a way. And I don't know whether you've ever heard a voice like that or not, but something said to me, go on stage. And I know none of my people for generations back had never been on the stage. You know?
How old were you then? You were about 13, 14?
I was around 15 years old.
15 years old.
15 years old.
Were you from North Carolina?
Yes, Brevard, North Carolina. It ain't on the map. You go to Asheville, then you, take a buggy and go to Brevard, I suppose.
Tell us about Brevard.
One of the greatest places on earth. It was a place where, well, it's a great resort, as you know, up in those mountains, most healthiest place in the world. And my father was a very great man. His name was Jim Aiken. And to tell the truth, it was no segregation in where I was born. The president of the Southern Railway, Mr. Orr, and other rich people that had, estates joining Vanderbilt, something, Vanderbilt estate runs from Biltmore on back in those mountains. We were all two people in the whole town that didn't go to church. Two men.
You say there was no segregation in North Carolina in this area.
That's right, in this town. I was born, we were all born and raised. I was born in a beautiful, I wish you could see the spot where I was born.
What have you
been? In a beautiful home, looked like a mansion. We had plenty of servants and everything.
What'd your father do?
My father was a businessman. He had the only white barber shop, undertaker shop, grocery store, dry goods store. Only he had a house and lot for every child he had.
You said a white barber shop?
Yes. Yes, only white people came in that barber shop.
I see. Mm-hmm. Your grandfather was a white man?
Yes. Lawyer Duckworth in North Carolina. Wonderful man, and never denied us children. Never denied my mother's children.
Well, hasn't this often happened, Moms? The white parent or grandparent, and sometimes having two families.
Yes.
Wasn't this often the case? Sometimes the case. What are you? You spoke of your grandmother. She was born in slavery.
She was a grandmother in slavery. My great grandmother was a grandmother in slavery. My grandmother was born during slavery. My great-grandmother was a wonderful woman. She was Cherokee Indian, mostly all Cherokee Indian. She lived to be 117. And her words was like gold nuggets. And I used to stay with my grandmother a lot. And after Granny got so old, well, then she came to live with my grandmother. And so I wouldn't be lonesome for my mother after they moved to Washington. She would tell me stories of slavery and things like that. Wonderful. And she would always emphasize, she would always tell me, she couldn't say Loretta, which is my name. She'd say Loretta. She says, Loretta, you're freeborn. And she would look out over the, look like where the mountain meets the sky, And where I thought the end of the world was, where that mountain, you know, met the sky. She told me, says, there's a world out there, and I want you to go out in it. I didn't have the opportunity, but I want you to go and put God in front and go ahead. And remember, sticks and stones will break your bones, but words will never harm you. And those are the words that's carried me through life. And I've had a many stick and stones through my life, but I always put God in front and come up.
Well, Moms Mabley, I think what impresses me, and I'm sure all who hear you, aside from the affection of the audience, I was about to say your audience, the Negro audience, but more and more now it's the white audience too, recognizing
yes.
your appeal, is this element you just mentioned. I'm sure that you had many tribulations and trials, but the survival power that you seem to have on that stage, the great overwhelming humor that you have that is so contagious, and the audience roars as we
hear. Well, I immediately, when I look out in an audience, they belong to me as my own children.
Of course, the thing that seems to register to so many who watch you, at least to me, is this love that you bear also has this wonderful sharp eye of sensing the weaknesses, the good in all of us, and the frailties that makes your humor so rich.
Well, we all have little weaknesses. A lot of my children have weaknesses. I've been insulted. I've been called names. But I don't get angry. I feel sorry for ignorance in any form.
Well,
you know?
I know?
And I'll try to help them. If sometime I've had people to insult me, and then after the show I have talked to those people, and tears have rolled down their eyes, and today they're some of my best friends.
Tell me about, again, if we may return to childhood again, you told me something earlier. You were a wet nurse at 14. Would you mind?
Yes, it was for a family in Asheville that I was a wet nurse for. They called the Dickersons. They lived out in the Gould Park section. This man had come to Asheville for his health, you know. That's a great tubercular resort. And he married this colonel's daughter, this old colonel's daughter. And they had this baby. And no formula, that they looked like they couldn't find a formula that would agree with the baby, and the mother didn't have the milk for it. She was kind of, well, she was around 37, I think, when she got married. And they, out of all of the women and that they tested, I'm the one that stood to test and nurse that baby. And I'd grown a fondness for that child. I loved that baby like my own baby. She was a part of me. I willingly gave her part of my life. I sacrificed my own baby. Sometime I would say to Lucretia, I'd say, oh, darling, I said, Lois, you're a big, strong baby. Little Lois is weak and sick. I said, now don't cry. I said, save some whole lot of milk for little Lois. You know, and I love that baby. And that's my life ambition someday. And I used to tell her, I said, someday I'm going to make you proud of me. I tell her, Lois.
Did you ever run into a...
Never, and I've tried. Very, very hard. That's the happiest moment of my life. Whether she's living or whether she's not, I'd like to know what happened to that baby.
She has your
to
milk.
To my baby.
Yeah.
That's my baby.
What of... thinking a mother, the subject of mother immediately brings something to mind. The woman, the mother in the Negro family has always been a strong, a rock-like figure.
Well, that comes from two or three things I can mention, you know. The mother, the Negro mother, is the rock in her family because the Negro mother, in one sense, has had more opportunity than the Negro father. And then, in another sense, the mother of a Negro family has had less opportunity back in the days of old. Because it's not because she wanted to do some of the things that she did, it was because she was forced to do it.
The father being denied manhood, in a way.
That's right. and couldn't say anything about it. And those things I know to be true.
So the mother had to take
Mama,
over.
And then, too, it was a great, deep, religious feeling and that faith in God that taking them through. So because that... Granny used to tell me they weren't allowed to have Bibles. And they used to have to go down in the woods, the same as you, and hide whiskers and they hide them. They'd go down at night by the moonlight and have a meeting, and they'd have to sing very low, you know. And those that were the ones that could read, why, they would read the Bible.
The Bible and sing the spirituals.
Sing those songs. And I remember Granny used to sing a song, "Oh, what a meeting over me. Before I'd be a slave, I'd be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be saved." I remember, she was one of the greatest people. She was the greatest. My great-grandmother.
Oh, freedom.
Oh, freedom. Yeah. They prayed. They trusted. They knew someday it would happen. And all of the things that are happening, Granny would tell me. She told me years ago. You know?
So it seems so logical and right that you, Moms, even the name you have, the nickname, Moms, has significance. Moms, Mabley, Jackie.
Well, the show people named me that.
They did, yeah.
Yes, both of both races, they named me Moms because I don't know why, even though I was young, they would always bring their problems to me to settle. And then sometimes they get away from home and wouldn't be able to get back, and I'd send them home. Well, I'd always put on a pot or something like that. And when I know that those ones that didn't have very much money, I see that they were fed. Things like that. So they named me Mom. I didn't give myself that name.
I know that you're a legend among entertainers. Mm-hmm. I know this as the one to whom often...
And they love me, and I love them to death.
Your experiences now in the early days after Buffalo. So it was in Buffalo. Then you became... What sort of shows? Camp shows?
No. I've never been on a circus or anything like that, or a burlesque or anything. And there was a circuit called the TOBA, which was the greatest thing and should be today, because it taught young people how to be entertainers, both as in character as well as ability.
And what of this matter? You say something now, you're inferring something here. It taught young people how to be entertainers. You're referring today there is less of a training ground, isn't there?
Yes. There is no training ground. These children will make a record, something, and you'll throw them out there on the stage. And that stage is a work of art. It's not to be played with. They go out there, they don't know even how to walk on it. But in those days, this TOBA time run from Washington, you go down by the way of Washington, and in 2 years' time, you come out by the way of St. Louis, because in those days, you work sometimes two and three, you know, weeks in one place. And then they had a vaudeville circuit of it, and then they had these little tab shows. You remember Tim Moore?
Tim Moore, yeah.
Yes, that was what they...
He was an emulator on the film.
His second show I was ever on was on Tim Moore's show.
The TOBA circuit.
The TOBA circuit, Theater Owners Booking Association. Yeah. A man by the name of Mr. Klein in Chicago was the president on this end, and then Boudreau and Bennett in New Orleans was the bookers on
the
other.
Even those Theater Owners Booking Association sometimes was referred to, ironically, I remember in the story of Bessie Smith.
Tough on black actors.
That's right.
That's what they used to say. But I don't know. I don't know. From the minute I went on the stage, I did the Rich Aunt from Utah, a comedy. The Rich Aunt from Utah. And it was a very funny comedian on the show, which later became my husband, as I'll tell you. That's where I got that material for my record from. But one of the finest men in the world. He was more like a father than a...
Here again, you kid yourself and kid your own history. In the sequence we heard, the beginning, you speak about the young girl marrying an old man.
That was funny. Yeah. We were playing Macon, Georgia. And a colored man by the name of Old Man Douglas Douglas, he had a theater, and above the theater he had this hotel. And I had taken very ill in Macon. And anybody in Macon, any man that was caught in a woman's room, had to marry or go to jail. So I was sick, and Leroy, the comic on the show, came in to see how I was feeling. And somebody got to fighting at the hotel, and the cops come in. And, of course, they went in everybody's room. And he said, what are you doing? And he says, well, she's sick, and I just came to see how she was feeling. I said, well, you'll either marry or go to jail. So they just called in a preacher and married her. No license, no brush, no nothing. Just come in, and we married. And he was just like more like a father to me. He was one of the finest men that ever was. He died here in Chicago, by the way. He taught me. I learned so much of him about timing.
I was just about to raise this point. Your timing, Mom's Mabel, your timing is fantastic. I was watching you.
Overnight, son. Yeah. And then from watching Leroy and just, I don't know, I guess this was just as I told you in front, the gift that was given me in Buffalo. Because I always tell them, I know exactly how. That's one of the secrets about the great Duke Ellington. He's one among few musicians, and you can't learn it in music for the rest of your life, that can time a note.
The Duke has that.
You've got to know that timing is everything in show business. It means everything. And you see on this TOBA time, the older people, like right here lives in Chicago, like Butterbeans and Susie. Yes. I was making, when I went in show business, I was making $12.50 a week and had a baby. And when I got raised to 15, I thought I was rich. And oh boy. And she was, you know, to have a baby, we had to have that kind of money, you know. And we went from Dallas, Texas, to a place called Port Arthur. And like one show going out and another one coming in. Butterbee and Susie came to me after the show, says, girl, who are you and where are you from? Say, you're sensational. Say, you're the whole show. Say, between you and I, say, how much is Bowman paying you? And I say, $15. Very proud, you know. Says, oh, ain't that a shame. Says, I tell you what you do. Say, put in your notice and quit in the next town, which was Port Arthur. And I did. And they wrote Mr. Boudreau and Bennett in New Orleans and told them, because they were headliners, Butterbean Susie, Bessie Smith, yes, Willie Porter, and those people were headliners.
You remember Bessie Smith?
Do I? Indeed, I do know. Worked on the bill with her many a day.
You did?
Mm-hmm. And they booked me from New Orleans to Chicago, to the place used to be on there called Monogram Theater. And they booked me there without a layoff at $90 a week.
They knew that you knew then, you see.
Yes, because I'd been over that circuit and I listened to those people and watched them carry themselves as ladies and gentlemen, you know. And if you didn't on the TOBA time, their punishment, you had to go over it again. I don't care how great an artist you was. If you had no character, if you didn't know how to carry yourself, you got to go over that circuit again. And you'd rather be dead.
Be rough grind.
Oh, baby. I guess some of the things that I've seen.
You mentioned Butterbeans and Susie. You work with some of the, of course, and you influenced somebody. Dusty Fletcher, for one, that marvelous comedian.
One of the wittiest comedians I've ever worked with was Dusty Fletcher. Dusty Fletcher. And then there was John Mason, used to call him Spider Bruce. He was the one that really wrote Open the Door, Richard. That's why they had that big loss.
Yes.
That belonged to him. But Dusty Fletcher was... It's not many comedians that can ad-lib, as you call it.
Yes.
You know, he was a great ad-libber. And I like to work with somebody that can ad-lib. One time I know a very big man, now that has a television show, says, Mom, we'd like to have you on the show. I said, but we'd never know what you're going to say. I said, well, I didn't wasn't particular about being on it because I don't like for no one to underrate my intelligence. After all, I love Mom, too. Yeah. And I know what to say and know when to say it and where to say it. It's not if you don't entertain an audience the same way. You got to know how to switch your material. And professional instinct teaches me when to switch my material. And after all, I worked at some of the finest places in the country, the Rockefeller Center. Yeah.
You were in Swing in the Dream, weren't you? Way back there was a Jazz Midsummer Night's Dream with Benny Goodman,
yes,
Bud Freeman,
and Louis Armstrong.
Louis Armstrong.
I did the third to the leading role. I was Miss Quince, midwife and stage director of that play.
Miss Quince, you played.
Miss Quince.
Yeah, this was a take.
We did one of the hardest things in Shakespeare, I think, Pierre and Thisbe in comedy.
And you did. So you directed.
And I directed nine of the best comedians.
It must have been marvelous.
Doing that.
Yes. Beautiful. Again, this matter of timing that you mentioned, it came out of the years and years of observation.
But I don't know when I started in the business.
Yeah, you had it then, too.
I had it then. It was just something that came along with that wonderful gift that God gave me.
Were you always the comedian? Did you sing, too? Were you always
sang? You had to do everything in showbiz and learn everybody's part. So if somebody takes sick, you step right in and do the part. Sing, dance, talk, everything. That was what was great about the TOBA. It taught you how to do everything and do it well. Not if you could sing. Of course, if you couldn't sing, it's a different thing. Then they perfected you in whatever category that you were best in. And so I started doing comedy.
So all this is contributed, really led to the making of you, Jackie Mums Mabley, as the performer you are. And I think it's fortunate too that Chess Records label have recorded some of your actual sessions with audience at the Apollo Theater, here at the Tivoli Theater in Chicago.
Oh, yes, with Duke Ellington, yes.
With Duke. Oh, many of the band leaders love to work with you. Duke and Count, I know.
I am the only one that ever sang a song with Don Bruce's band without any music.
Without music.
That's right. They laughed at me. Said, Mom, where's your music? They're Jackie at that time. They go, where's your music? I said, I ain't got none.
What of your comic material, Mom? It's any. There's no one source, is it? It's anything. Just as a while ago, you spoke of you yourself were married to an elderly man, that you made a humorous thing out of it in the routine we heard.
Yeah. To tell the truth, you don't have to look for material, darling. The way the world's going now is funny.
Yeah.
It is. It's comedy. It's funny, and especially the truth, and the things that I record. Very few of my jokes. It's really true. Now, about that baby.
Yeah.
That's my... I do think there's time to wise up a child. And someday, I might be gone, but science will find it out and everybody else. Because what I got and how I feel, and goodness knows I started young enough raising children, has a lot to do with those first words, how you raise that child. Tell the child the truth. Why lie? Because those lies are raised. And then when that child tells you a lie, you want to whip it, and that's wrong. Tell the truth. It's much easier.
This element again of a truth and irony. This, you say the world is funny. Things, even now, the sense of irony that you have in this, we're about to hear, I think this was in the Tivoli or in the Philadelphia Theater, the Uptown, with the audience, you're reenacting something of now. I think it was in Philadelphia.
The Uptown Theater.
At the Uptown Theater.
Yeah.
We hear your voice. You're talking now about visiting Georgia. I think it was. Is this?
that is very funny and very, very one of the touchiest things of the world today, and something that I pray daily, please straighten it out before we lose our standard in life.
There again, your timing, and as you say, this is not funny. It's funny and yet not funny.
Yes, it's more pitiful than funny to me. My brother, my baby brother, wrote that song, Eddie. You think Mom's clever? What a clever boy that is.
So Eddie works with you now and then on occasion.
Eddie, he works at Saks Fifth Avenue in New York. He's a dresser at Saks Fifth Avenue, but he was in show business and... Well, he had a trio, and one of the boys didn't turn out so well. No, and he write this. So they were called the Three Riffs, and they were very good, playing all the top places. But of the boys went bad, and he was so wrapped up in his act and loved it so much. I think that's why Mom always worked by myself, because when I'm there, the act is there. I have no one to depend on. If I ruin it, I ruin it myself.
You've always been a solo performer, then?
Yes.
Always a single?
Yes, yes. Yeah, only one time. There were two boys who got stranded in New York one time, you know where the old Cotton Club used to be? Afterwards, it was called a plantation. And they were doing rehearsal. They used to rehearse two, three team of dancers. And then at the last minute, they let them all go but one. So these two boys from Alabama, I never forget, Red and Curly. Curly Hamner, you know the boy that was with Lionel Hampton for quite a while that played drums, Curly Hamner. And they were going to let those boys go, and I felt so sorry for them. And I told them, since I was starring in the show, I told the boss, I says, don't let those boys go, I want to work with them.
And that was he?
And we rehearsed that night while I was buying a chicken. You know, we rehearsed and then went over the house. And he came on that night, and I worked with them during that whole show, which lasted about 6 months. I worked with those two boys.
Moms, something, as you're talking, something occurs to me. Have you noticed changes from contrasted to when you first began the early days working the TOBA circuit in the trend, in the humorous trend and the tastes of people? Has there been a change, or is the humor basically the same?
Well, son, one fault, they do a lot of stealing, which Mom don't. I don't. This comedian stealing from that comedian. This one stealing the other one's jokes. In my estimation, I believe in the golden rule, thou shalt not steal in no form, because if you steal my material, you might as well steal my money, because that's my living.
Because you don't have to do that, because it's yours. It's uniquely yours, it's
just me. And I just said to myself when I started making records, I said, as long as I talk about myself, I won't be in no trouble. And my life is enough to make records from now until as long as I live.
It seems that you use your life...
My own life. I talk about myself. As long as a person talk about themselves, they're all right. But when you start talking about the other fellow, that's when you're in trouble, Jim. You know?
Your life is so rich, then, that it goes on. And these, may I suggest to the listeners, again, the Chess albums. One is called Mom at the UN, and the other is called Mom, Just Mom's Mabley, the funniest woman in the world. And it's this freewheeling spirit that you seem to have there. And again, it comes way back to your grandmother's comment to you about being freeborn.
That's right. And I love the people that in Mississippi, because I sing that song. I love the people in Georgia. I love the people all over the world, regardless. They're doing the best what they were taught to do. What if you was raised up? What if your mother always instilled in your head that it's not as good as you are, or you are better than that, and you mustn't play with that? Still, that must work for you. That must do everything for you in life, but you are not as good. It was hard to get out of your head what your mother has always, or your parents has always instilled in there. But it is coming out. It's getting better all the time. It's got to get better. It's time. There's a time for all things, and this is the time for man to open up his eyes and realize that God created all men equal. And it will happen. I'll go to Mississippi tomorrow, and I'll go to Georgia tomorrow. They're not going to do nothing tomorrow. In fact, they want me to go to New Orleans, they want me to go to Nashville. I only wish that I was able to do the work and go to places that they want Mom today. I want to go to all of them. I feel sorry for those people. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. And another thing, I want to go, of all places, I want to go to Israel. I've always wanted to go to the Holy Land.
I think you'll go over like a house of fire.
And I want to go, and I want to go on a goodwill tour for Uncle Sam. I think I would help a whole lot. I think the truth will stand anywhere in the world.
The truth and laughter, you know.
Yes, to make them happy. His pops always say, they ask Pops, you know, he's going to Russia, you know. And I said, Papa, what do you know? He said, cats are cats all over the world.
On this note.
That's right.
Jackie, Mom's Mabley. Cats are cats all over the world. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for telling us of yourself, what makes you the artist you are.
Bless you, son. Bless you.